If you have a financial question for Peg and guests today, you can call this number, keep in mind, 24-7, 1-888-6-ADVICE. And, of course, you can always email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But right now, we urge you to call or text our studio line during the show at 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. Once again, here's Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor, Peg Webb. No Bruce today, Peg.
No, we're giving Bruce the day off. Well-deserved. This is the second one in a row, which normally he hasn't done that in like 27 years.
Yeah, so. I was just going to say that. It's pretty rare. Well, you brought a special guest with you today.
I did. And, you know, usually Bruce and I cover the nuts and bolts about budgets and investments and the markets and all sorts of things. We got the new bill out there. We did a big show on that a couple weeks ago. And by the way, we have got so many questions after that show. And just as a reminder, if you go to wealthenhancement.com, Bruce and my radio shows are all on there. So if you want to go backwards and learn about that one big beautiful bill, as we talked about, you just go under resources and you'll see radio show, and then you can listen to the show or put it on your iPhone or something like that. But today we're going to talk about money, which money is so emotional. It ties all our sense of security, our freedom, our confidence about the future. But Bruce, since he has the day off, I decided to bring in a special guest, Wendell Clark. Now, Wendell is a behavioral wealth science specialist with Wealth Enhancement. He actually headquarters in the Sandy Springs, Georgia, Atlanta office. He focuses on the human side of money, how our emotions shape the choices we make. And boy, have I learned that with all the clients over the decades. He comes with a background of psychology experiences, including education and community-based services. So through his experience, he's developed this attentive listening, meditation, assessment, intervention skills. This is all about people coming in and asking about their money. He's got the role of behavioral wealth specialist. He enjoys photography, martial arts, and welcome, Wendell, to the Your Money Radio Show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So I've always thought that I should have attained a psychology degree to help my clients through such complex decisions that they have to make. Can mm-hmm. you address financial psychology? Like, how does emotions drive people's decision making?
Okay. Well, I think that when it comes to money, that you just said before that money is very emotional, and I believe that is true, because money is tied into a lot of the things that we need for survival, right? We need to pay our electricity bills. We need to have food. We need to have water. You know, when you think about, you know, if you think back to psychology classes, I think everybody had to take like psychology 101. And you think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, the physiological needs, shelter, safety, water, food, that's at the base of the pyramid. And you don't get any of that without money. Right. And when you start talking right. about people's survival, this is something that is primarily an emotional thing when people don't have their very needs met. And it goes higher and higher up the pyramid, if you guys remember that. But when we start talking about money, we're talking about a very emotional thing. Sometimes when I ask some of my clients and they come in and they talk about their financial goals and I ask why, and sometimes people scoff and say, what do you mean? I want to make more money. Of course I want to make more money. But I often ask why to ascertain, like, what's the emotion that's driving the need for your money to grow? Is it, I want to leave a legacy for my children, right? Is it, I want to protect my family? But is it, I want to have a sense of flexibility. I want to have options, right? So, but beneath all of these things is some kind of emotion, right? If I want to protect my family, that this is me wanting to feel safe. I want my family to feel safe. Feel safe. That's an emotion, right? So things like this are always something to keep in mind when we start talking about money. A lot of times we try to justify a very emotional decision with a more logical or rational rationale. But at the core of most of the decisions that we are making about money, there is some emotional driving experience that is there, whether it's for protection, whether it's for and safety, whether it's for an expansion into feeling comfortable, right, or responsible, sometimes even some of the more negative emotions like guilt, you know, something that I may have felt that I should have done before in the past that I didn't do a good job before of taking care of my money or taking care of my parents, so I want to do the difference with my children. All of these types of emotions are part of how it is that we make our decisions.
So when we're talking about these emotions, I've you know, worked with many, many clients over the years, and I've said on this show several times that some of the thoughts of money you were taught when you were 2 years old, let's say, or you kind of watched your parents, what they did with money. Can you address a little bit about the emotions with your finances? That's my feeling. I talk to clients a lot about their history, but what other financial outcomes are there that we should talk about today?
I love the fact that you talked about history, because there are so many people that have financial practices that are things that they've inherited. We in financial psychology, we have something that we call flashpoints. And financial flashpoints talk about impactful events that happened in your past that strongly impact the way that we see money or the way that we think about money. And I think about my own mother, for an example, who is from the Caribbean. We're originally from Trinidad and Tobago. And I always laugh and tell people, underneath every Caribbean kitchen sink is 1,000 plastic bags, right? 1,000 Kroger bags or Walmart bags. You never run out of them. And everybody kind of smiles and laughs and says, I know someone like that. And sitting with my mom one day, I asked her, why do you do that? And it was something that she also got from her mother. But the reason for that was that market bags in their childhood were very scarce to come by. So they began to save these plastic bags and kind of stash them so that whenever they have to go to the grocery, you know, they would always have something to put their produce and things in. We don't need to do that anymore because, of course, here in Kroger and in Walmart, their plastic bags are plentiful, but that habit has never stopped. Right. So this is one example of this. Similarly, I have clients who may have had, and this is an example again, a parent or grandparents that escaped to America during the Holocaust. And because they came, they had to start over financially. And a lot of what they had to do was to save and save and save because of how many things were lost during that awful tragedy. The mindset of save everything you can, the mindset of, you know, if it's broke, fix it, do not buy a new one. You know, this is something that's been passed down from generation, almost kind of like a generational trauma, a financially generational trauma. And this is something that we sometimes see in people when we see clients that want to be a bit more aggressive in portfolio or in their financial planning, but they can't necessarily bring themselves to execute, because there's a very ultra-conservative mindset that came from things that happened in the past that was passed down.
Yes,
and that's why it's really important to understand, you know, your emotions and your identity, but also to understand the things that have happened in the past. These financial flashpoints that may have happened in your life or in the life of your family members, because they do... in some way, very small or big, they do inform the way that we see money in the present.
So how do we actually reclaim, you know, a life of confidence around money and its meaning and its joy? I mean, I've worked with many clients now over decades, and it actually is a really fun part of my job in that asking those questions, and you get to know people so much better if you can understand how they feel about money and, you know, what is their wishes and wants when it comes to having money or providing for others?
That's a great question. So reclaiming that life, one of the first things that I like to do with people is to find out what's most important to them, right? What drives them? What are the things that lead to the decisions that they make? So I'm going to want to do a values assessment. And in our office, we use something that's called life priorities. And that is an assessment that identifies what are the goals and the values that are most important to my clients. More often than not, when I'm sitting in a session, I am listening to my clients talk, and I am trying to parse out what are the motivating values that are being spoken here that speak to the way that this portfolio is constructed. And a lot of times when we do the exercise, the person is like, oh, this is my life priority. Yes. You know, and that can be something like more financial independence. That can be having a happy and loving family. That can be education. Multiple things can come to the front. So I want to find out what are the most impactful values and goals there. And from there, what I want to help my clients understand is an expanded view of money. More than just like my wealth or my net worth is more than just your money. Because when you look at just the money, we're not looking at the full picture of what your wealth actually is. And the maxim that we operate in is the six elements of wealth that talks about money, time, relationships, wisdom, signature talents, which are things that are really, that you're really good at and that you do well and that you enjoy doing, right? And also your mental and your physical health, because all of these different dimensions are things that can be toggled in different ways to create a more meaningful and joyful life filled with confidence for our clients. And if I can go a little bit further, I would say, for example, I don't really think that many people would say that their life is satisfactory if they have a $30 million net worth, but they have absolutely no relationship with their spouse or their children. Would you agree?
I totally, yes.
Yeah. So we want our lives to have meaning. We want our money, right? We want our money to actually do the things that we want it to do. So if I have this money, is this money being used to make sure that I have a life that is filled with meaning, that is filled with value? When I talk about my money and I talk about my kids, right? I talk about the legacy I want to leave for them. Am I leaving behind a legacy that will help my kids be comfortable? Will it help my kids be resilient? Will it help my kids be both? Will I be comfortable with the example that I have left for them? Do I go to work every day doing things that I love, making money that I can then put into this portfolio? Or am I dragging my feet every day, loathing having to go to work? My romantic life with my partner, can I use some of this money that I am growing to make sure that we are healthy, right? Not only healthy in our relationships, but also in our mental and physical situations. Because I think about Steve Jobs, you know, as wealthy as Steve Jobs was, his health at the end of his life, there was nothing that could be done to extend his life. And I know that if someone showed up to him and said, hey, I can give you this and it'll cost you one third of your wealth, he would say, absolutely, take it, anything to extend my life. So we need our physical and our mental health as part of our overall wealth makeup. So reclaiming that life of confidence, joy, and meaning, to me, looks like understanding who I am, understanding what my goals and my values are, right? What motivates me when my financial planner sits and says, this is what we're going to do. is this plan aligned with my goals and my values? Do I understand who I am? Do I understand the financial flashpoints that have happened? Do I understand my emotions and my identity around money? When I understand that and I can align my financial plan with my goals and my values, this is what's most likely or most promised, I would say, to bring us a meaningful and joyful life.
Many of the wealth enhancement advisors within our organization have taken special training because this is how important it is to ask the right questions. And I have a question for you because this is, I've always kind of struggled with this in that many, many people come in as couples and they're not the same, you know, opposites attract. And
that's
so
true. That's very true.
Like, how do you combine two different, you know, personalities and ask all these questions and then get to the end? You're the specialist. So how do you get there? We have a couple minutes here for you to answer that.
Okay. This one makes me smile because there's a lot of, there's a lot of marriage and family work in some of what it is that we do here too, you know, within, with regards to financial psychology. And I often do get spouses that are on opposite ends of the spectrum with regards to what's important to them. And what I have begun to do is to look at, first of all, is your relationship one that is more complementary, where you complement each other, or are you the type of people that are basically the same? And how I frame this is that some of us are going to have priorities and goals that are the same. So that makes it much easier for us to execute on a plan, right? So let's just say, Peg, you and I, we both had financial independence, fewer commitments, greater freedom, and growing and learning as three of our priorities, right? If we both share those priorities, it's easy for us to come up with a plan and execute together because we are well aligned in that way. For people that are not as aligned, it's a little bit different. So what I listen for, sometimes I hear one person saying, having a happy and loving family, and then a husband will say, financial independence. And these two may seem like they don't go together, but I often frame it as we're taking different vehicles to the same destination. Because if I have financial independence, I can take care of my happy and loving family, right? A happy and loving family more often than not has a measure of financial independence. So we're taking different vehicles to arrive to the same place. Because no one is saying, oh, this value is not important. It's just that to me, this is more important. And there are no wrong answers. And what I point out in couples like this is that this complementary relationship has the hidden advantage of us seeing each other's blind spots better. Because if yours is happy and loving family, and that's where you focus, I can see the blind spots where you might sacrifice some financial independence for family. But the same is true for you. You might look at me and see where I might put family second to make sure we have financial independence taken up first. The advantage of that is the people that have the exact same values, they don't necessarily see their blind spots because they're synchronized so well. So that's how I usually address this, that we can be consonant and we work together really well, or a little bit dissonant, but the dissonance allows us to see the blind spots of the other person. And that's always a good thing as well.
I love what you said there. And we've got a couple minutes and I just kind of want to wrap this up in that here's my observation with the people that I've seen over decades of time. Is it's possible that one is so enthralled in their career. Right. Mm-hmm. And then they come see it. They come to see us either 2 days or maybe 2 years before retirement. And we're supposed to patch this all together. Right. We have a couple and one was just so passionate about their work. And the other one, you know, did a lot when it came to family and that kind of thing. And so when we come back from the break, I'd like to talk about that because I feel like that's a big part of our job. is aligning. You don't have to be the same, but aligning those wishes and wants and getting on the backside of kind of retiring, because quite frankly, a lot of people come to us when it's that huge decision that they have to make. You know, do they have enough money to retire? And they can't really do it as a unit alone without some financial advice. Mm-hmm. And especially people like you, where and myself, where we've had this training, the psychology training of behaviors when it comes to money, is something that is part of our financial advisor job. So, Denny, what I'd like to do is, and I know we've got a minute or so, but I'd like to get everybody to call in. And if you got anything to talk about, and maybe you have a story to tell about, you know, you going through this, or any questions, that would be great for the second half, Denny.
Absolutely. Keep in mind, our studio line is open. You can either make it a phone call or make it a text question for either Peg or Wendell. Here is the number, 651-461-9226. We always like to advise you, too, that if you think of something maybe midweek, a couple days after the show, you can always call 888-6-ADVICE. And leave your message, and they'll pick up on your question on the following shows. And again, if you prefer to email, you can do that too. yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Again, any email, go to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But if you want to call, question, or a phone call or text, 651-461-9226. We'll be back. If you have a financial question for Peg or Wendell this morning, you can call this number 24-7, keep in mind, 888-6-ADVICE. You can also email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But we do urge you to call or text our studio line right now at 651-461-9226. Once again, here's Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor, Peg Webb.
Oh, thank you, Denny. So we've got a special guest, because sometimes we think we can separate our emotions from our financial well-being. And in reality, our job is much more complicated than that. So we brought in Wendell Clark, which is actually a behavioral wealth specialist at Wealth Enhancement's office in Atlanta. He focuses on the human side of money. He has a background of psychology experiences. He's got education and community-based services. Through his experience, he's developed attentive listening, intervention skills, all of which are very effective when you think about a behavioral wealth specialist. All of us advisors have been trained on this because it's super important. Welcome back, Wendell.
Thank you for having me.
What I'd like to do is I kind of set up an example of, you know, the differences between couples and mm-hmm. how they may not think alike. And I thought maybe you could give us a couple tips as to how do you walk through, let's just say they're polar opposites. How do you pull that together?
So we talked before about the values assessments and understanding what's most important to people. I also, when we're in these conversations, Peg, I often warn clients that, you know, it's okay for your values to be different. They don't have to be the same. You know, like when it comes to taking our vitamins, you know, some of us need different vitamins and we need different minerals, right? And just the same way, because of the way that we're made, we're going to have differences in who we are and what we need. So I start by making sure that people know it's okay to be different. After that, and we find out what their most important values are, what their life priorities are. One of the other things I want to actually listen for in their conversations are money messages. And money messages are the thoughts and beliefs around money that inform the way that they behave. Because sometimes, while people might be polar opposites, like you said, I don't always think that everyone understands the money messages that their spouse has. So they see the behavior, right? I may want to spend more money on education, but my wife is really, really super frugal, and I think education is very important because this is how I got, this great job that I have, and my wife is really frugal because, this is how she's always grown up. And I start to do some deep diving into a little bit more background. How did you guys grow up? What were your experiences with money at home? I'm listening for financial flashpoints, and I'm listening or uncovering the money messages, because the money messages, Peg, inform a lot of times, or they tell us what it is that we're looking at here, right? We talked before about people who had parents who had been through the Holocaust. Now, I'm going to give a different example for you. Sometimes we have couples where one person has come from money. They've inherited money, and it's a long line of inheriting money. And another person has not come from that kind of background. So they have been raised very differently with regards to money. And there might be a money behavior that, irritates one spouse more than the other. But when we sit and talk about money messages and we tie these money messages to past experiences, a lot of times there's an aha moment that happens in our client meetings where a client is like, "Oh, wait a minute. I never put those two together. This is what you didn't grow up with. And because of that, you've gone to the opposite side." You know what I mean? Like, you didn't have a lot of money growing up, so you decided to become very frugal because something in your past happened. You had to live in a place that wasn't comfortable, or you had to endure, bullying and criticism because of how you looked. And as an adult, you internalized this and you decided, "I never want to live that way again." Meanwhile, for me, as a teacher son, which is really true for me, a teacher son, education was the most important thing there is. So now we're seeing why we behave the way with regards to money, and now we can formulate a plan, understanding, who we are, what happened to us, what these money messages are that inform some of these values that we have about money. So now we can form a plan, because usually, Peg, people can operate with a lot of grace for another person when they understand. And that's what I try to encourage, empathy and grace, right? The big challenge, believe it or not, is for people to have empathy and grace with their own selves. That's what's usually more challenging.
The only other thing, we do have questions and texts and coming in, but I just want to make this one last point here is being a woman, I feel like we still have this angst, if you will, about the one that's probably going to live longer, right? And those are just statistics at this point in time. And so people of my age group or older, we have this fear of running out and having to deal with health and long-term care and that kind of thing. Can you just kind of comment on what you're seeing when it comes to women and longevity of life?
Well, in my experience, I do have more widows that we serve than widowers. So we have a few. But yes, wives are generally surviving their husbands. And it's generally a little tumultuous after the loss of the husband because, this is my life partner, and oh my gosh. What is this going to look like for me now? What is the future going to look like for me? So one of the things I like, Peg, is I like to encourage prevention better than cure, as my mom would say. So I want wives to come to client meetings. I want wives to be involved in client meetings. So a lot of times, I am asking about spouses. I'm asking about their interest. If you don't want to be at every client meeting, that's fine, but I at least want you to come to the office to meet us, to know who to call, if something happens to husbands, and vice versa, because by no means am I like, husbands are the only ones that are involved in financial affairs. But I do want spouses to know who to call, know to call us, have business cards. And the advisors I work with like to go through fire drills. And a fire drill basically is understanding in the event of emergency, who do you call? What are we doing and what are we not doing? We don't want people to make immediate rash decisions because they're in a very, very emotionally compromised state. So, you know, right after the passing of a spouse, this isn't the time to make big decisions. Call us, you know, and we'll help the person through. And a lot of that is building the relationship from before. If we've built a relationship from before, when there's a spouse that passes away, you know, we're here for them, they can access us, and we're going to continue with this relationship that's there. But I like for that trust to be built from before so that things are already put in place. And many people do talk about long-term care insurance. They talk about estate planning. That's something that we talk about before we get there, which makes it a lot less traumatic or difficult when a spouse passes away.
I love that. Hey, Denny, let's get listeners involved.
Absolutely. There are a couple of ways to do that. You can phone in your question or you can send a text, 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. Here's a text. Our adult son is living at home, and my husband and I want to have a discussion about him getting able to move on his own. He's capable, hardworking, but is not motivated to have his own place. How do we start?
That is a great question.
Yeah.
Adult son living at home, I would say to start that conversation, I think that one of those conversations, the first thing needs to start with goals and values. We need to understand what are the goals of this young man, okay? He's capable. He has no motivation to do so. What is he motivated by? If he's not motivated to leave his parents' home, might there be a fear that he has not communicated, you know, or is he just really comfortable and he sees no need for things to change? If that's the case, you know, after finding out what motivates him, what are his wants, what are his long-term goals and visions for himself, maybe a little bit of fire, you know, not a broiling flame, but a little bit of fire underneath him might motivate him to do that. Because if we have what I have seen a lot, if there's a lack of motivation, if there isn't something to work towards, there's not really going to be any particular motion in some people. Some people have intrinsic motivation. Other people need a little bit of fire. So perhaps a talk about his goals and his dreams and then making a plan to achieve that with him moving out, being a part of that, is something that they can say, and they can set a timeline for him and be willing to help with his transition.
I think that I love what you just said. In mm-hmm. some cases that I have witnessed, yeah. is, and this might actually just be kids that just got out of college and they're not really mm-hmm. motivated to go get that big job, or, you know, yeah. they want the freedom and they want to travel and they want. But the mm-hmm. parents are looking at the person and saying, this is not the flexibility or thought process we had. You know, because mm-hmm. right out of school, you both mm-hmm. a lot of times went and got jobs. And right. I think these different generations are what's kind of throwing everybody off in that they're not thinking the same as we did.
That's true.
And so I thought I'd add that to the conversation, because that's what I'm witnessing with our clients is,
yes.
and they love them. They love these kids, right? And it's such a
right.
hard conversation to have. Anything
yeah.
to add to that?
Well, there's a measure of trust, I think, that needs to be involved here. I believe that this child has parents that he trusts. And, you know, because of that trust, if you're going to give I don't say a boundary, but if you're going to create a plan for, you know, an exit strategy, right? I think that with most people that have kids, you realize I took the kids to get immunized. They hated it. They were mad at me for getting them an injection. And, you know, 8 weeks later, they forgot about it because it was good for them anyway. Right? I see it very much the same way. There's a trust here. We have a relationship. This is what we're doing, and it's for your own good. And it might be uncomfortable at first. And I think that the institution of a new boundary, especially across different generations, is a little weird. You know, and I say a little weird because sometimes it can be just downright painful, and sometimes it's just a minor inconvenience. But a lot of that is going to be based on the relationship that is had. right? If there's a relationship of trust and love there, you know, child is going to move out, and in some time he's going to recognize that his parents did this, you know, for the right reasons. Now he has more independence that he probably knew he could have had before.
Denny, let's take another call.
651-461-9226. Peg, you and Wendell touched on this earlier. This text says this. What advice do you have for couples who think differently about money? One is a spender, the other is a saver.
Yes. Advice that I would give for couples that are very different, have conversations about your money history. Have conversations about how you grew up. Have conversations about the financial flashpoints that happened in your past, the things that really cemented your thoughts about money, and realize that within the confines of that relationship, ultimately, both of you all want the same thing. You want a successful relationship where everybody's needs are met and you see things differently. And there is a middle ground for both of you. There is a time to be a saver, and there is a time to be a spender. But if we communicate with each other openly and honestly, if we operate from a place of grace, right, and we try to understand the behaviors we're seeing, not from our own perspectives, but from the perspectives of the person in the context of how they grew up, it'll be easier for us to find that middle ground, that sweet spot in the middle. Peg, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I'm telling you, I've seen so many people that are just polar opposites.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I love everything that you said in that you kind of walk through all these ideas or maybe somewhat of a vision of how this could work out. And mm-hmm. It tends to work out. In some cases, the saver, the one that really mm-hmm. doesn't want to spend, mm-hmm. you almost have to ask a lot of questions about why. You know,
sure.
Once again, you mentioned history. That
yeah.
history is so ingrained. And I have to tell you, even in my family, I felt like, you know, why am I, you know, more successful than, let's say, my other siblings? Like, why, mm-hmm. why am I that person? Well, I think it was just, hey, I've got this gift of being able to talk to people and pulling out the information that we talked about today, you know, your emotions of money and what do you want out of life? But so it's the caring and sharing of, mm-hmm. you know, you have to be open to that. And I have to say, even for myself now, it is hard for me to spend money. I mean, I spend money. So people will think, oh, I don't know. I know her pretty well, but I mean, I'm not a big, big spender.
Okay.
I like the savings because that's what I got to live through all these clients' lives. And mm-hmm. I'd like to take advantage of all the things they did, you know, to
right.
be successful. Can you comment on that a little?
Taking advantage of these things in life, the clients' lives. I think that when we do the things that we do, there's such a window, Peg, of looking at multiple lives. And it really is, it's a privilege, you know, to be able to be trusted by many people enough to like just get these windows into how people have lived, what works for them, what hasn't worked, and also to put things into a particular perspective. I think that one of the things that you just talked about is having a different experience from your own siblings. And it's important for us to always remember that people can live in the same house or the same household and have very different experiences. Wouldn't you agree?
I totally agree. Yes.
And I think that some of those different experiences is why it is that people grow up to be so financially different, because people will experience the exact same phenomenon in the house in a very different way because of scarcity in one household. You know, some kids may say, you know, we have to save big time, while other kids, you know, might say, no, I want to spend because I never got to spend when I was younger. And I see this across families that have multiple children that might span lots of years, right? Older, having to donate clothes to the younger, for example, because of hardships that happened. So, you know, younger kids are like, no, we always got hand-me-downs. I want to spend. I want the new things. I want the things that are modern. Meanwhile, the older kids were like, no, we grew up and saw mom and dad dealing with hardship. So this is what we learned. And they're all in the same house. So I think that it's interesting to look at all of these things, and it helps inform some of what works best for us, but also to some degree who we are and why we are the way we are.
Denny, let's try to get one more in here with a couple minutes we have.
Obviously interest to a lot of our listeners. In fact, a text just came in that said, what book or publication might be good to read to continue this subject? They're awesome subject, they said.
I would say there are several books that are really, really good. One of the ones that I'm reading right now is The Psychology of Financial Planning by Brad Klontz. You know, I would also talk about the Psychology of Money. Everybody knows that one, I think, by Morgan Housel, right? And there's a third one. I'm also doing a reading right now on financial therapy, and that's also by Brad Klontz. You don't necessarily have to be a therapist to read that book, but it talks a lot about the concepts that we discussed here and the understanding of how money and emotions walk hand in hand.
I also would say that Psychology of Money, I think that one is a good basic one to start with. And I think it's important that you do seek out to learn a little bit more. And I even encourage clients to read that and kind of get a basis for a start if you're going to see an advisor like ourselves. And and then I like what you said today, in that there's so many things that can kind of enter into your mind when it comes to money. I mean, it's just such an emotional thing that it's so interesting that part of our job, a big part of our job, is going through the psychology of money and what do you want to do with it. We really got about 30 seconds here, but I wanted to thank you for coming on. It was a very popular topic. Any very last words?
If there's anything I could leave with you guys, I would say your wealth is more than just your money. Understanding your relationship with money can be leveraged for better financial outcomes. It's extremely emotional, but it pays to understand those emotions in order to make decisions that better align with goals, values, and bringing you a life of confidence, meaning, and joy.
Any?
Excellent. We'll hope you join us again next week, Peg, and thank you, Wendell. If you have a question midweek, call 888-6-ADVICE. You can also email questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Again, any email questions, send them to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. We do hope you join us again next week with more of Your Money.